You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in once again to Full Contact Fighter Radio. My name is Kelsey Moad, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining me, as always, is the co-host from Edmonton, Alberta, a city that, sadly, Brandon, looks like your famous Edmonton Oilers are not going to make the playoffs and will not be able to take a run at the Cup again this year. How's the city taking it, buddy?
I don't know. I'm just not that conversant in the hockey talk.
No?
Believe it or not.
I thought every good true Edmontonian loves their Oilers. I mean, I'm an Oilers fan, and being an expatriate.
I'm not really from Edmonton. I was more of I grew up in Saskatchewan, which basically means like you're a hockey free agent. Mm-hmm. You can cheer for whoever. And I really didn't like Gretzky's Oilers, so I was always a Red Wings fan. Because I grew up watching Detroit television, of all things. So.
Well, I take great offense to those comments about the Oilers, I gotta be honest. I grew up in Edmonton, and I think everyone should be an Oilers fan. Anyone who cares to disagree, send me an email to radio@fcfighter.com.
I got bigger problems though today. I got big bad news.
Which is?
I gotta go to New York City in a month.
Really?
And my passport is no longer working, so I gotta stand in an insane lineup.
Well, I think if anyone needs a passport to get entrance into the United States, it certainly should be you.
Well, thank you for your vote of confidence, because now I have to get one.
Yeah.
That'll give me all the encouragement I need when I'm standing on world-weary legs in a 17-hour lineup.
Yeah, that sucks, man. some of the lineups
I really feel your love, Kelsey.
Well, let's, New York, let's try to tie that into some kind of mixed martial arts talk. Got a good show today. We got Brad Adams coming on the program. He's going to be fighting Heath Herring at the upcoming UFC. That's going to be an interesting heavyweight matchup. And then Dennis Kang's going to be joining us as well. He's got an update on his hand for us. He injured his hand in his recent Spirit MC fight in South Korea, which he won by unanimous decision. So we'll talk to Dennis about that fight and also his future in Pride and his thoughts on the future of Pride, etc. So should be a good show, Brendan. Let's hope.
I'm looking forward.
Stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Live at the LA Forum, March 17th, 7:30 p.m., the International Fight League brings you four of the world's best mixed martial arts teams battling head-to-head. Brazilian legend Marco Ruas leads his Southern California Condors against Kenya Sudo's Tokyo Sabres. Plus, Frank Shamrock pits his San Jose Razor Claws against Buzz Rutten's LA Anacondas in a north-south rivalry. Get your tickets now at the Forum box office or Ticketmaster.com.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, and see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the hillbilly heartthrob, Mr. Brad Imes. He's going to be taking on Heath Herring at the upcoming UFC, April 7th in Houston, Texas. Brad, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing good.
First question for you, Brad. You're taking on a guy who, a lot of fanfare with his arrival in the UFC, Heath Herring, and then you ran into Jacob Bryan. Did you get a chance to see that fight? And if so, what was your assessment of Heath's performance in that fight?
Yeah, I watched it. Jake O'Brien is an incredible wrestler, so, Heath obviously had trouble defending the takedowns. Jake wasn't really able to do any damage to Heath on the ground, but was able to control position on him and I guess you might call it lay and pray, but that's really kind of how he won. By watching the fight, I think Heath, made the mistake of expecting McCarthy to stand the fight up, when it went to the ground, as long as there wasn't any damage being done. But, you know, Jake was doing a good job of getting cross-eyed and getting them out and stuff like that, even though he wasn't doing a lot of damage, was able to, you know, get the win. So, you know, I expect that Heath will probably train much harder for this fight and come in better prepared.
And what does that do for your own preparation? Do you look at it sort of expecting Heath to come out with all guns a-blazing, so to speak? Like I said, there was a lot of fanfare behind his arrival, a Pride veteran. Do you expect him to be a little bit more aggressive, or do you think he might be more tentative with a loss, coming off a loss?
You know, having watched his fights in Pride, I really expect him to come out and be aggressive. You know, that's really kind of his bread and butter. I think he performs better when he does that. You know, and I think also, you know, the reason he might not have been as aggressive against Jake was because Jake's such a good wrestler. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you get aggressive and come forward on a wrestler, you know, there's that much more chance of getting taken down. And, you know, while I have wrestling skills, they're not nearly as developed as Jake, so I would imagine he'll probably be more aggressive in our fight than he was against Jake.
What do you need to do, Brad, to beat Heath Herring, other than the obvious of knocking him out or submitting him? But, I mean, what kind of game plan can we expect you to have against Heath?
Well, we'll get into specifics. But,
fair enough.
You can expect me to be aggressive and just try to impose my will on him. You know, I think, you know, I can come hard for 15 minutes. I got great cardio, and I got a good chin, so I can take a lot of damage, and I can go hard for 15 minutes, and that's really hard for a lot of people to deal with, especially, you know, when the guy is as big as I am. So, you know, it's gonna be a tough fight for Heath. You know, it's a tough fight for me too. I mean, he's obviously, he's got a great pedigree, so, but it's a fight that I expect to win, and, you know, I think, you know, I go out there and fight to my game plan and just, you know, make him be defensive. I think that I'll be successful.
Brad, your last fight in the UFC was against Dan Christensen last April, and you sustained an injury in that fight during the armbar. I believe you broke your arm. Tell us a little bit about the healing process from that injury. Where are you at now? I know you've had a couple recent fights, and I'll ask you more about that in a minute, but what did you take away from the Dan Christensen fight, Brad?
Well, I did. I broke my elbow, not really my arm. Mm. I just broke some chips off the end of it. It started to break, and I knew it was going to be bad, so I went ahead and tapped out. But, I had the surgery on it. They cleaned out all the bad parts and you know, fixed it. And it doesn't give me any problems now. Just as good as new. So, but as far as that fight goes, you know, I did lose the fight, which was unfortunate. But you know, I really felt like I fought my best fight against Dan. You know, I really controlled the fight. I was aggressive, and I was able to put my punches, you know, on him and make him hurt. You know, against Rashad, I threw a lot of punches. They weren't as accurate, and I hadn't really developed my boxing to the point where I could really throw good, effective punches. A lot of them were arm punches and didn't have a lot of zip on them. So I did a lot better job of that against Dan. And, you know, I did get, you know, I'm getting armbarred like a minute and a half left in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff's going to happen. And the one thing you can't teach is experience. And, you know, Dan had a lot of experience and I didn't have a whole lot. And he got me. So, you know, all the credit to him. But, you know, I think that the more fights I have, the more, you know, the more of a challenge I'm going to be for the guys that I fight.
Now, I mentioned that you've had a couple recent fights, and I think, you know, some people, unless they're really the avid MMA fans, might not be aware of this. They're on some smaller shows, but showing a nice range. You had a submission win and also a knockout in February. So tell us, the fans who might not be aware of your recent fights, tell us just quickly about those two fights, Brad.
January 27th, I fought in the XFC show up in Spirit Lake, Iowa, which is kind of up in the middle of nowhere by Minnesota. And I fought a guy named Greg Hammer. I didn't really know a whole lot about him coming into the fight. And, of course, the promoters told me, you know, no big deal. The guy was 6'10", 290 pounds.
Wow.
And built like me. So he was a big fella, and I controlled the first round. You know, I hit him a few times, took him down, was able to control him, hit him with some elbows. And in the second round, it was kind of more the same. He cracked me with the right hand and dropped me, and then he jumped on me, and I was able to submit him. But, you know, I hadn't been in the ring for about 9 months. It was, I wanted to shake the rust off, but he knocked it off, you know, cracked me with that right hand. But, you know, in hindsight, you know, at the time, I was like, these sons of bitches doing this show really, you know, set me up. But in hindsight, you know, I think it was the best thing for me, you know, to get out there and to fight somebody that was tough. You know, and then my next fight in Orlando, the guy was, you know, it wasn't as challenging to fight. You know, I was able to work some things I've been working on, knock him out of the knee. So, you know, I actually got paid more for that fight than I did the other one. But I guess that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about your training camp for this fight, who you're training with. I know you spent some time with the Miletic guys. Are you still out there? Or tell us a little bit about your training camp for Heath, the fight with Heath.
Yeah, I'm still up in Bettendorf training with Miletic. You know, I spent a lot of time training with me and Ben Rothwell. We're kind of attached at the hip at training, so we spent a lot of time together. And he's a great guy to learn from. And he's really, I think, one of the best strikers in the world at heavyweight. And you know, and he's been really good, helped me out, and, you know, trying to bring me along. And I go up to Milwaukee with him every once in a while. I'm training with Duke Rufus. You know, working my Muay Thai and stuff, so it's really been a great experience. And of course, Pat and Tim Sylvia and all the guys up there, you know, you really couldn't ask for better training partners and better coaches than what we got up there. So, you know, I wouldn't rather be anywhere else. You know, I feel right at home up there.
Well, of course, when you made it to the Ultimate Fighter television show, you only had, I think, about a year of mixed martial arts training under your belt at the time. And at least on the show, they sort of cast you as more of a submission specialist, you know, or knowing that was more your bread and butter, I guess, at the time. I don't know if that was an accurate portrayal or not, but tell us about the evolution of Brad Imes as a fighter then. Do you think that you're more of a ground guy, at least at the beginning, and have you evolved and learned some, feel more comfortable on your feet now than prior, say, 3-4 years ago?
Well, 3 or 4 years ago, I wasn't even in the sport, so, I mean, when I first started training, there was absolutely no stand-up skills to me whatsoever. I came from a little bit of a wrestling background, wrestling when I was a kid. You know, and I picked up the jiu-jitsu pretty quick. You know, a submission guy, I don't know, I caught some people in some submissions, but I don't think, I think it's, you know, a myth that has evolved, and that's fine, I'll let it keep evolving, but, you know, I trained the ground really hard, you know, and I work a lot of things in practice that you don't see big guys work. Like I work rubber guard and things like that, that you don't really see guys my size that are even able to do it. But I have pretty good flexibility and pretty good body control. So there's some things that I can do that kind of surprise people. But really, I think now that being up here at Miletic, I've really evolved my stand-up game. And, you know, I think now that I'm really more dangerous on my feet probably than on the ground. You know, I think both places, I mean, nobody's going to come into a fight with me and say, you know, this guy's a great striker, I'll take him down, he sucks on the ground, you know. And that's a good thing is that, you know, I have developed everything, you know, along, because a lot of people make the mistake of, well, I'm just going to develop my stand-up and then, you know, people just take him down and beat him, or I'm just going to develop my grappling, and then people, you know, they can't take people down and they get knocked out. So, you know, and Miletic is, we got, you know, it's the best of both worlds. We train it all, and it's really helped to develop me as a well-rounded fighter.
What was the mood, the sense, the atmosphere around Miletic after Tim Sylvia's loss? Brad, did you get a chance to talk to Tim about it? You know, I know that Tim didn't want to go into specifics about a possible injury, et cetera, but can you tell us a little bit about that, or were you in the know about his injury going into
the fight? Well, I was in Dallas at the time. I was in Dallas for a couple weeks, and I just got back into town on Sunday. And I haven't really had a chance to speak with him. You know, I mean, obviously he's upset.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I think there weren't a whole lot of people that expected that outcome, but Randy Couture he's a legend for a reason, you know. And he did his homework on Tim, and he came in with a great game plan and executed it. So, and more power to him. I wanted Tim to win real bad, but, I think that Randy, you know, getting the belt back it's just going to bring more people into the sport because they hear about that, you know, a 43-year-old guy winning the heavyweight title.
Yeah.
And the toughest sport in the world, you know, and that's, I think it'll just help expand the sport to new venues and get new people interested in it. So, you know, I think in that aspect it's good.
And for yourself, I mean, being a heavyweight fighter in the UFC, and like you mentioned, Couture being the champion now, so that's going to put a lot of attention again on the division, but it's amazing how much things can change in 6 months to a year. A year ago, people were being critical of the UFC for not having a deep enough heavyweight division, that they needed more fighters, and they brought in Fabricio Werdum, Heath Herring, Mirko Krokop. What's your thoughts on the state of the UFC heavyweight division, and now Randy, the type of competition he's going to face?
You know, I think that the sport now, as opposed to a year ago, the heavyweight division is really much deeper than it was, for sure. You know, they brought in a lot of new guys, some familiar faces from Pride, but then some new guys that have been surprises. So, and Randy, who'd have thunk it, you know, expect him to come out of retirement and, you know, as a heavyweight, I think the division's great right now. I'm excited to be a part of it.
When you were on the Ultimate Fighter show, you talked about getting into MMA because you wanted to live the life of a professional athlete, former football player, etc. Brad, as you look where you are now, is this where you wanted to be, and how good is it being able to do this full time? Is this always what you had hoped for?
I love what I do. You know, and there's a lot of people that get up in the morning and they hate going to work. So, I'm fortunate in that. You know, I like what I do. It's opened up a lot of opportunities for me. I just got done filming a movie in Dallas. And, those things would never be possible, you know, without fighting. And, I mean, plus I love to fight anyway. So, you know, I suppose if I wasn't doing this, I'd be in jail. So I guess it's a good thing I've been there before for fighting, so good to stay out of the pokey.
Well, Brad, you're a really educated guy. I think you're just shy of even a graduate degree as well. Do you find that some people stereotype you based on what you do for a living right now, and people sort of expect you to be like an ah shucks kind of, you know, ignorant person just because of what you do? Or do you find that there's more acceptance in mainstream culture as far as realizing that just because someone's a professional fighter doesn't necessarily mean that they're not an articulate and well-educated person?
Yeah. I mean, certainly, when I meet people most people in the country, and it's changing more and more, but most people really don't know anything about the sport. The only thing they know about it is what they've maybe, heard on the news about, John McCain back in the day about human cockfighting and what a barbaric thing it is. So, and of course, people that's all they know about the sport are going to assume that, you know, if you fight, that you are that way, you know, you're unintelligent, you're barbaric, whatever. And I think, people that I meet and then they find that out are usually somewhat surprised and shocked by it, because I don't carry myself as a goon, you know. And most guys in the sport don't, you know. Most of us are well educated, and one thing I like about the sport is at the end of the fight, it's just a sport. It's not, we're not out there trying to hurt each other. We're just trying to win, you know. And guys shake hands and hug each other after the fight, and it's all over then. And I think people watch the sport and they see that, and they come away with a different perception of it. Whereas in boxing, there's all kinds of trash talking and crap like that, and people really don't want to listen to that crap, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think that as more people get exposed to the sport, their opinions will change of it and start to realize, we're not just a bunch of barroom brawlers, as some people like to call it.
My last question for you is in regards to Rashad Evans. You fought Rashad in the heavyweight finals of the Ultimate Fighter Season 2, lost a close split decision to Rashad. At the time, Brad, looking at Rashad and watching him fight in that show and seeing where he's at now, did you expect him to go to the level he has now, and especially when he announced he's moving down to light heavyweight, did you figure that he would have the success that he has now?
Well, yeah, he performed really well on the show. I mean, he beat a deep field on the show, and we had some really good, and most of the guys that were in the heavyweight division on that show were light heavyweights. In fact, really all of them except for me and Dan were really true heavy, were, you know, really light heavyweights. So, you know, I really haven't been shocked by it. I mean, he beat me, so he must be a real stud. But, you know, and I still keep in touch with Rashad, talking to him every once in a while, and, you know, I'm real excited for him. I hope he gets the belt, you know.
Yeah, do you think he could give Chuck a run for his money?
Well, he's got to get past Tito first. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the, I heard that he's fighting Tito in 71, but, you know, I think the sky's the limit for him. You know, obviously he's developing his game, he's knocking people out with his feet, so, you know, that's something that, you know, certainly took me by surprise, but, you know, he's training at a great gym. You know, he's got incredible training partners, and great coaches, so, you know, I think really the sky's the limit for him. You know, I hope he does really well.
Actually, I'll ask him one last quick question. Krokop versus Gonzaga. It seems like everybody is just forecasting that Krokop's going to get by Gonzaga. We're going to have Couture versus Krokop. What do you think of that, Brad? Do you think some people might want to reevaluate that before they look past Gonzaga too quickly?
Gonzaga is obviously, I mean, he's an incredible jiu-jitsu guy. You know, certainly one of the best in the UFC and maybe the best in the heavyweight division. And, you know, and his stand-up is not pitiful. I mean, he's got decent hands and he's aggressive. And, you know, I think if he doesn't make the mistake of backing up against Krokop, because that's when he's really most dangerous, is when you are moving back and he's able to just unleash those legs on you.
Yeah.
You know, I think if he's able to get in, clinch with him, maybe even just pull guard and get him to the ground, you know, I think he could certainly be dangerous. You know, Krokop's, you know, well-versed on the ground, but obviously he's going to want to keep it on his feet. That's where he has the best chance of winning.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I would certainly favor Krokop in the fight, but I don't think it's a walk by any means.
Well, it's certainly an interesting time in the UFC heavyweight division. There's no doubt about it, and a very interesting heavyweight fight coming up between yourself and Heath Herring. Brad, we appreciate coming on the show, and best of luck on April 7th.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight Shorts, Camouflage Board Shorts, Corduroy and Camo Hats, Hooded Sweatshirts, to the classic FCF T-shirts, Full Contact Fighter Clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF Sticker and Banner Shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF Shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter. The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Hey, everybody, this is Joe Altierte Dirksen, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio once again is Dennis Kang. He's coming off a big victory at Spirit MC this past weekend over Jung Kyu Choi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably butchering it, but... Dennis, the good news is he got the win, and then there's some unfortunate news in regards to your hand.
Yeah, unfortunately, I broke it in the second round, and I mean, you know, I was able to keep on with it and pull off the W, but It is going to keep me out of action for a few months at least. I think I'm scheduled to be in surgery next week. So, I mean, that's that for a while now, anyways.
Yeah, that's, I mean, not, I don't want to bring it down any further, but it's got to be quite disappointing for you. You came off an arm injury, bicep tear, shoulder tear against Misaki, and this is your first appearance back. Did you know right away, Dennis? I know in talking to you in the past, you've broken that hand before, and he said that you knew, and you kept fighting.
I knew right away when I broke it. This time, the difference with this break and the other breaks is this break actually hurt. The other times when I fought Joe Dirksen, when I fought Seminar, the breaks, I knew there was something wrong with the hand, but it didn't hurt. This one hurt like a bitch, pardon my French, but it really hurt, and I really had to push the pain out of my head and just, you know, focus in on the fight itself so I wouldn't be too distracted, you know. And it turned out that when I went to the hospital and took some x-rays, I'd actually broken the hand in two places, so that's probably why it hurt more than before.
Tell us a little bit about your opponent for people who aren't familiar with him, and how was the fight going, and how much of an impact did the broken right hand have on the fight, Dennis?
I think I would have finished the fight a lot earlier if I didn't have the broken hand. You know, I mean, this guy, Che Jung Kyu, he's known to have a really good chin, so a hard head, as a show of a broken hand and good cardio. We started off just exchanging a little bit, and I did end up taking him down and taking him back early in the first, but he proved to be kind of good at defending the choke. Early in the second round, we exchanged again, and that's when I felt the hand break. And from then on, it was just, I just basically just kept jabbing his face and kicking his legs. I mean, what saved me really is my jab and my cardio, you know, because I felt him get a little bit tired, and I was able to push it on through and just kind of mess with him mentally and act fresh. You know, and especially with the jab, I think I felt him get real frustrated with my jab and double jabs.
Well, let me ask you about the Spirit MC a little bit. This is the first time you competed there in almost a year. Are the Korean fighters, are they starting to become well-known athletes in Korea? I mean, was your opponent, is he well-known in Korea, or is it still not quite there yet as far as a fan base getting household names?
Yeah, this guy's pretty well-known in Korea. This guy's kind of like a people's champ, you know, because he's like a regular guy. He's not like a super good athlete or anything like that, but he's real tough and rugged, and he's got a lot of desire to win, you know, so he's one of those opponents. And there's a lot of other fighters that are starting to make names for themselves over there just because of they're racking up victories and, you know, they're really dedicating themselves to the sport. Korea has a lot of already naturally good athletes and good in boxing, wrestling, and judo, you know, so it's only a matter of time until they become a force to be reckoned with. The only thing that I see hurting Koreans, you know, worldwide MMA rankings, is that all Korean men have to go to the army from the age of 19 to 22, so that they're going to lose all the young athletes in their prime right there for a few years.
Right. And is your head still swelling from the fans' reception, Dennis, when you go to South Korea? For people who don't know, you're well known there.
The praise that I get over there, you know, it gets bigger every time. But it's really, I find it really humbling. You know, it's the opposite. I don't see it. It doesn't make me feel, you know, any conceited or anything like that. It really makes me realize how important fan support is. You know, you really need that, and it just makes me work harder, you know.
Well, let me ask you about Pride then. As you mentioned, it looks like you're going to be out for several months. When are you hoping for a comeback then? We're talking maybe July, August? Is that even too soon?
Yeah, I hope maybe July. No, I don't think it'll be July. I think probably August or September.
Okay.
You know, I think that would be the more realistic.
You know, and some things have unfolded since you've competed last, and you did color commentary at the last Pride, which you did a nice job, by the way, buddy.
Thanks.
You know, Misaki, he was taken out by Frank Trigg. What were your thoughts on that fight, and did it go the way you expected, Dennis?
With Frank Trigg and Misaki?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it went exactly the way I predicted. Because I know that Mizaki's an easy guy to take down, and if you can take him down and control him on the ground and have the cardio to last all three rounds, then you can beat him like that, and that's exactly what Frank Trigg did. That's what I was trying to do in my fight, but it didn't happen like that exactly, unfortunately.
Yeah. And as far as Dan Henderson taking out Wanderlei Silva, it certainly raised his stock. Again, people are, you know, I saw a lot of the rankings. Dan Henderson has sort of risen up to number one in a lot of the rankings, etc. What did that performance do for your appraisal of Dan Anderson and where he's at as a fighter?
It brought my respect for him even higher. You know, I mean, here's a guy who's been around for so long, and he's won a bunch of tournaments already. Tough tournaments, not, you know, little tiny local tournaments, but tough tournaments. And now he doesn't really need to move up in weight and fight such a tough guy, but he does anyways. And not only does he win, but he wins by KO. You know, so the guy never stops to impress.
And what are your thoughts as far as him holding two titles? Do you think he's going to be able to compete regularly enough to defend both of those? And I mean, for yourself being a fighter, what would that be like, Dennis, to have to defend two different titles at two different, you know, weight classes?
I think, you just have a little bit more title fights. That's it, you know. Like, for example, if you only have one title, usually what happens is, you know, you'll fight a title fight, and then you'll fight two or three non-title fights, and then you'll fight a title fight. If you have two titles, you'd probably have to be a little bit more, economical and fight only title fights.
Yeah.
One for each weight class and no more small bouts.
I wanted to ask you about one of your former training partners, Jason McDonald. Of course, he had great success in the UFC and then ran into Rich Franklin. Did you see that fight, Dennis?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on that, both on Jason's performance and Rich's?
I mean, I think they both did well. I think, you know, it's obvious that Rich had the upper hand standing up, but, you know, I think Jason's a smart guy and he's a good athlete and he's going to learn from this and come back stronger, you know. I know this for a fact, you know, because I know the kind of fighter that he is. I mean, you know, they both stepped in there and they both gave it their all, and Rich was the better man, you know. I think if they had a rematch in a few months or if Jason got some more training, I think it'd be a little bit different.
When you look at the full contact fighter rankings, which are voted on by all the writers, we've got you at 6th in the world for middleweights, Dennis, and they've got Dan Anderson at number 1, Anderson Silva at 2, and Paulo Filho at 3, Lindland at 4th, and Franklin at 5th. I'm not going to ask you to break down all those rankings, but generally speaking, from your point of view, do you think that Dan Anderson should be ranked number 1 in the world at middleweight, and where do you think Anderson Silva should be? Should he be above Filho, do you think, or below?
No, I think... And Dan Anderson should definitely be number 1. Number 2 should be, I think it should be Anderson Silva. Yeah. Because he's the champ. You know, Philly's got a good record, but he's not the champion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being a champion goes pretty far.
And you've got someone like Matt Lindland in the mix, who a lot of people would have easily in the top 5 for most people's middleweight rankings.
Yeah, the thing about Matt Lindland is he hasn't been fighting in that many big shows, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody knows how good he really is and things like that, but it'd be nice to see him fight in bigger shows. We're going to see in a few weeks him fight against Fedor.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting.
I know you're a great admirer of Fedor. What are your thoughts on Matt Lindland going up against Fedor? I mean, what does he have to do? Do you think he's going to be able to get Emelianenko down to the ground and win it from that point, or what does he have to do?
I mean, that's going to be his... That would be his smartest move, I think, is to try to make it into a grappling match. Fedor has shown some weakness recently, and that's when he's on his back. You know, he hasn't shown like he's completely vulnerable, but we've seen that it's definitely not his strong point. So if Lindland can, you know, wrestle him down and ride him there, he might be able to get a decision or even maybe a submission, although that would be hard. But, you got to remember that Lindland's Olympian in wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone just gives you, it makes you a very high-level athlete. So I think it's going to be a closer match than people expect, for sure.
Dennis, while we have you here, I want to get your thoughts on the situation surrounding Pride. There's so much speculation as to what the future holds for that organization. And to be honest, it's tough. I mean, there's not a lot of American or North American fighters that compete for Pride. I mean, there's a growing number, but for someone like yourself who's fought with them for quite some time, what is your sense of what's going on as far as its future? There's all the speculation about who might buy it, who might not. And does that affect you at all as far as the outlook for your career?
A little bit. I mean, this is the company that I work for. You know, I don't want to be out of a job soon. Although, you know, worst comes to worst, there's a lot of other organizations out there right now. So it's not like I'd be completely going out into the wild. But to be honest, there's a new rumor about Pride every week. You know, so you can't really know what's what's going to happen. I mean, I remember about 4 or 5 months ago, everybody was saying that they were being bought out by WWE and then UFC, and, you know, and it still haven't been bought out by anybody. So I don't think that anybody is going to buy them out. I think that, you know, right now, they're probably not doing as good as they would like to be, you know, where when they have the big TV sponsor, but I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be.
Yeah, and do you think that's what's key? Do you think it's key for them to try to move some of the drama, I guess I'll use that word, surrounding the loss of their cable deal in Japan? Do you think things would be a lot different? And do you think maybe that they, as far as coming to the States, did they wait too long, or should they not even really concern themselves with infiltrating the American market?
No, I don't think they waited too long. I think that they're doing the right thing with trying to get into the U.S. market, you know? And they probably, I mean, UFC's got so much momentum here and such a good foothold on the U.S. market, it's going to be hard for any organization to give them a run for their money and let alone beat them at their own game. But I think Clyde is still doing the right thing by showing up and saying, here we are, this is us, and we're here to stay, you know? It doesn't mean that they're going to try to completely take over everything and things like that, but they're still, you know, showing their face around.
And from your knowledge of competing in Japan, I mean, there word comes today that K1 Heroes might be coming and doing some shows in North America. Is K1 Heroes, in your experience of being in Japan, is certainly a very successful kickboxing organization. Do you see them as being a potential rival to Pride as well, especially in Japan? And what are your thoughts on them coming to North America as well?
I also heard that they were coming to North America, and I think they will. The only problem with K1 Heroes is everybody knows, actually some people know K1, but not that many people know the K1 Heroes organization, which is, you know, the MMA division of K1. So I think they're probably going to face a little bit of, low numbers in the beginning, but eventually, you know, I mean, anybody who's seen a K1 Heroes, you know, either on video or live, knows the kind of quality that stands behind their product. You know, their production is second to none, so I think it's only a matter of time until it starts to take off.
My last question for you, Dennis, I know you don't want to look too far ahead, you want to get through the surgery and the healing process, etc., but when you do come back, what are your thoughts? Do you want to jump right back into the fire and get in the ring with as top flight competition as possible? Who would you like to fight in your first fight back?
No, I mean, you know, I'm all, you know, they always ask me this question and I always say the same thing. Right now I want to fight Dan Henderson. He's the champ, you know, he's the top guy to be gunning for. I only want to fight the best. Right now we're both injured, so I thought maybe we could have a match right now, two handicapped guys going at it, or we could wait until we both recovered and have a match right there.
Yeah. You know? So were you, tentatively, you were going to be competing on the upcoming Kamikaze card for Pride?
Yeah, I was supposed to.
And have they named an opponent for you yet?
No. It's I mean, it's irrelevant at this point anyways.
Right.
Simply because I'm not going to be on there.
Yeah. And there's been a couple fights announced early on for that card, and I think that the main one that people I've been struck with is Sokoju is going to be fighting Ricardo Arona. Do you have any thoughts on that? And I mean, how tough is that for Sokoju? Back-to-back fights against two top 10 205ers in the world.
Yeah, no, that's a fight. You know, that's going to be an action-packed fight, I think. You know, they're both going to be scrambling, and yeah, somebody's going through the ropes at one point for sure.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, we appreciate you coming on the show again. Best of luck as far as how the surgery coming up, and that is unfortunate news, but we look forward to seeing you back in the ring as soon as possible.
Hey, my pleasure, Kelsey. Thanks for having me.
Full Contact Fighter.
The undefeated, no holds barred news source of the world.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Brendan, some interesting comments from both Brad Imes and Dennis Kang, and some things that Dennis said in the interview I found interesting and somewhat, it's got to be frustrating for him, and of course he agreed with that and admitted it as much. But Brendan, for a guy like Dennis Kang, he makes it to the finals last year's welterweight tourney, tears up his shoulder, tears up his bicep, loses to Misaki, and then has to take this time off, goes and has a fight in Spirit MC, which I think, you know, was somewhat of a no-win for him. Everyone expected him to win. He's a big star in Korea. Everyone was hoping that he would win over there. Although I guess his opponent's pretty popular there too, but nonetheless, breaks his hand. Now he's back out until probably August.
Yeah, you know, that's tough, and he, you know, he's had hand injuries before, and, you know, maybe you hate to think the guy's cursed with brittle bones in his hands, but there are fighters who just are notorious for breaking their hands when they punch, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he made mention of Gotti, who always breaks his hand, it seems, every fight, and of course Fedor Emelianenko has been plagued with those problems. You know, and I think it's got to be frustrating for him, of course he said the same thing, it's just, if you look at what's been going on in the middleweight division, especially in Pride, he had Trigg come back and then easily beat Misaki, and Dan Henderson, of course, the big win over Wanderlei Silva. So there's some interesting things going on in the middleweight division, and I guess we're going to have to wait and see where Dennis Kang factors in the mix. I guess it's going to be a few more months' wait. He was supposed to fight on this upcoming Pride card.
Well, I think he should maybe go to Russia. I think Fedor had that new... those new depleted uranium metatarsals put in, or metacarpals put in, so he'll be good to go now.
Yeah,
he'll be able to punch through armor.
A couple announcements about that upcoming Pride Kamikaze card this week. Sokaju is going to be fighting Ricardo Arona, and Brendan, I guess the opponents that Sokaju's got to face, it doesn't get any easier in Arona.
I kind of feel sorry for, you know, Sokaju. You know, he makes this big splash in Pride, and he's kind of like faced with the catch-22 of Randy Couture's victory. So Randy gets Crow Cop as his booby prize, and poor Sokaju gets Arona. So, but who knows? You know, he could show him up again. I think it's another kind of you know, no lose scenario for Sokaju, and Arona's got everything to lose in this fight. So it's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, and there's some. Other interesting people that have been confirmed for that card I'm interested to see, and I haven't had a chance to see him yet. Zal Galasic, the Croatian fighter, has fought in Cage Rage. Brendan, you've caught, I think, a couple of his fights. What are your thoughts on him, and should people be excited that he's signed on with Pride?
Yeah, I can only remember one of his fights, and he looks fairly good. The fight that I saw, I don't think displayed, he didn't display all of his skills, but... you know, if he got the call up, then you know, I think he's probably not brought in as a can, and it would be interesting to see them, because Pride's always had a fairly close relationship with Cage Rage, I think. So it'll be very interesting to see how Pride and the UFC go to war over the British fighters.
Yeah, and Shinya Aoki's also been announced for the card, and I'm excited about that as well. I don't know a lot about his opponent. He's a Dutch striker, apparently, Brian Loadnojo, or Nijo. I'm butchering his name. I'm brutal today. I've butchered several names on the show. Kind of surprised by that announcement. It almost, you kind of got to wonder, and I could be wrong and totally misinformed, because I admit I don't know a lot about him. I think he's got a record of 3-5. But from my perspective, and a somewhat uninformed perspective, it almost seems like a bit of a step backwards in a way. If you look at who they've matched Shinya Aoki up, he's becoming a bigger star. He just recently defended his Shudo middleweight title. What are your thoughts on that, Brendan?
Well, I don't think anyone wants to fight him.
Yeah.
You know, who would step up to say, you know, who would step up to get in his path right now? He's come out with some splendid victories. So I think the Pride middleweights kind of break up into the really high-end guys, the really big-name guys, and then sort of the best of the rest. And right now, I'm sure he could fight with anyone in the top echelon, but he's probably the best of the rest. So I don't think anyone has any interest in stepping up to fight him.
And Aoki falls into one of those kind of interesting weight categories. He's kind of hard to rate in that respect, because he's kind of like Gomi, where he fights at around just a few pounds over 160 at lightweight, I guess, or what you'd call lightweight in Pride, although they don't refer to that. Well, I guess they do, but it's obviously heavier than the North American standards. But then yet, he also can fight close to 170, Brendan, so he can also be ranked at welterweight, even though he doesn't usually walk around at like 185. So he's one of those fighters, like the FCF rankings have him ranked in two different weight divisions.
Well, that's kind of disappointing too. The Japanese fighters are notorious for not liking to cut or not bothering to cut a lot of weight. So I, you know, it's tough to say. It, you know, is Gomi a true lightweight? Can he fight at 155? Is Nick Diaz a true lightweight? Because they both fought at that lightweight in Pride. So I don't know. It's tough to say. That's a big weight range to give away. It's tough, you know, it's two completely different body styles. 55 and 70. It's 15 pounds. So it would be. You know, I think there are probably a lot of people that just fall nicely in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting as well. I mean, this is very typical of Pride. They named some fighters that are scheduled to appear and haven't named opponents yet and probably won't until several days before. And Vanderlei Silva, if he's cleared to fight medically, I guess he could be fighting. They're saying he's going to be fighting. Who do you think, Brendan, would be thrown in the mix against Vanderlei at this point? Do you think Pride's going to put him up against someone that he can walk through, or are we going to see him...
I'm just going to make a sort of mystical prediction into the future. It's going to be someone from Eastern Europe who we've never heard of, whose name, last name, consists of four vowels and 17 consonants, and probably fought, you know, in freestyle wrestling behind the Iron Curtain, and may wear a single strap wrestling singlet.
Right. You, no, but honestly, so, that's you figure that they're just going to give him someone he can just tear through.
They have to.
Yeah.
You know, are they going to? You know, he can't. I don't think he can lose three in a row if they're going to salvage any value out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think it's going to be some poor guy who's working in a coal mine in maybe Romania. And you know, who's fought in the 1970 Olympics or something like that, and they'll dust him off and throw him in there with Vanderlei.
Fujiya,
and he'll do well.
I think Fujiya has been announced that he's going to appear, and I know there's been some rumors, and I want to reiterate that it's only rumors that Jeff Munson might actually be going there to fight Fujiya. Have you heard those rumors as well, Brendan?
I thought that was a done deal.
Really? Well, I know. So yeah. I read that it was reported on his website, that Jeff Munson was saying it was a done deal, but it still hasn't been confirmed on the Pride site. So I don't know if that is true, Brendan. What do you think of that fight? Are you interested to see that fight?
Yeah, no, I think that'd be a great fight.
Yeah.
You know, not overly enthused, but I think it'd be a decent fight. You know, Fujita. I guess you know I don't know the fighters that I really like are the fighters that really. The fights that I look forward to are fights that can really end in any way. And, you know, Fujita has a very, I think, limited repertoire, so, you know, I don't see him any fights in a whole lot of different ways. But, you know, I think that will be a good tilt.
It's kind of eerie timing, Brendan, based on our last show. We talked a lot about K-1 Heroes and whether or not they're a viable competitor to Pride in Japan. And maybe that, you know, over here in North America, we don't always consider them in the mix. It's always UFC versus Pride. And then news comes this week that they have plans of doing some shows in North America with K-1 Heroes.
Well, I know they're trying to groom some fighters out of the K-1 organization to find that same success. And then Mighty Mo fought and won his second MMA fight. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. You know, to be quite honest, I honestly don't know why they don't join forces, and maybe that's just a idle speculation from a North American, but you know, I'm sure there's lots of reasons why they don't. But you'd think they could, garner their resources to fend off the UFC horde, but K-1 seems to have a much more diversified portfolio.
Well, yeah, I've never been a huge follower of kickboxing K-1. I would think, though, that they've got pretty deep pockets. I could be wrong. I think as far as them merging with Pride, I think that probably would only be a viable option if you saw Pride bought out by their ownership, because it just seems like, Brendan, that they must just be tarnished so bad with the drama and all the rumors and et cetera regarding to some of their ties in the past, and it just seems like no one wants to touch them as far as affiliate with Pride. I mean, they still are. It's been, almost a year now, and they still are without a cable deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, I think it's all about, it's all about face, and once your reputation has been tarnished, like their reputation was tarnished, with their supposed involvement with the Yakuza, you know, once that's exposed, then I don't think anyone's going to do, any legitimate business is going to enter into a relationship with you until you've, rectified that situation.
Well, and tarnished with no evidence, too. I mean, that's the ridiculous thing. There was actually
No evidence. And the speculation in Japan is, you know, the only thing that's going to happen to make that happen in Japan is probably the sale of the company, so.
Yeah. And I guess the quote I read, and it was on MMA Weekly, was that, and I can't remember which official it was from K1 Heroes, but they even said that there might be a surprise in there for Dana White. Do you think we could see this again, Brendan, a whole other round now of Dana White versus a Japanese promoter, but this time in the form of K1?
Well, kind of, I wonder what kind of surprise they could be talking about.
Yeah, who knows? I would suspect it, you know, maybe to referring to someone that they've signed, or who knows? You kind of look around and you think, you look at the quote-unquote free agent market of mixed martial arts fighters right now, and it's, you're kind of hard-pressed outside of Matt Lindland, who, of course, is fighting Fedor in Bodog Fight, and it remains to be seen as far as how many fights he has with that company. It's kind of hard, Brendan, right now to think of names that strike out at you right away as free agents in mixed martial arts, or at least it comes to mind right now for me. Can you think of any on the top of your head?
You know, I really can't, and I think the UFC is being very, very aggressive right now. Like, I think this is a, you know, this is the time in mixed martial arts, like the time in the Monopoly game where you just buy everything, you know, regardless of how little money you have, you just sort of snap everything up to keep it away from your competitors. And I think that's the way things are in MMA right now, if you think about it, because UFC's got deep pockets right now. They got a lot of free cash, and I think they like to nail down. You know, who's ever not nailed down right now. So, and you know, Dana's made that very explicit that he's going after everyone. So it will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and an announcement from Bodog Fight this week that they announced that Jeff Osborne is going to be their commissioner. So you're really starting to see this kind of, Brendan. You're starting to see presidents and CEOs of these promotions sort of become, and I don't know if this will be the case with Bodog Fight, but you see these guys almost become the center point of dealing with media relations, etc. Kurt Otto, someone in the IFL, you know, you got Jerry Millen or Saki Kabara in Pride. Jeff Osborne, I mean, he's a well-educated MMA guy. He's been around in the game for a long time, former promoter. I thought that was and I enjoy his comments usually in the Bodog Fight series. I thought that was a good move by them.
No, I think so too. You know, I think it will be good. I guess the other people who are getting snapped up are anyone who has any form of legitimacy in terms of and credibility in terms of either commentating MMA, managing training MMA. You know, I think that's one of the things that IFL has done very well is that they snapped up all these figures. And made them coaches, basically locking them into that organization, which gives them, you know, a lot of credibility. Maybe not to the people who aren't familiar with MMA, but certainly people who are familiar with MMA. So, you know, it's not surprising. Basically, if you think of MMA play-by-play or color guys who aren't tied down right now, there's not, you know, there's literally none that come to mind. You know, there's only a hand on, you probably count on one hand the people who are really good at what they do, and they're all basically tied down now.
Mm-hmm. Some news on the UFC front. Forrest Griffin's going to be out of UFC 70 with staph infection. David Heath comes in to be his replacement against Lyoto Machida, two guys that are undefeated. I think, though, even though David Heath, he's won both his fights in the UFC, and it's kind of an entertaining guy to watch, there's no question about it, that's got to be somewhat of a loss to the UFC to lose Forrest Griffin, who, despite the recent loss, is still a huge star for them.
Yeah, it will be interesting to hear more about that injury, because that could be a, I don't think, if he's pulling out of a fight, it's not the staff that those guys had on in the Ultimate Fighter show where they have a rash and are kind of pooped out.
Yeah.
If you get a staph infection, especially in one of your joints, that's fairly, can be potentially very, very serious injury. There have been people who have required amputations, you know, as a result of staph infection. So it can be, depending on what version of the bug he's got, it can be tough, and, you know, he might be having to take time off, and they could be on, you know, broad spectrum IV antibiotics too. So.
Well, who was it just recently? Now the name escapes me. I mean, we made mention of the show, I guess it was about a month ago, but there was a fighter.
Was it Benji Raddick who had a terrible spider bite that turned?
Yeah, he had a bad one, but there was someone just recently who was paralyzed from the waist down, and now he's on recovery, and everything's been taken care of. But he was temporarily paralyzed from waist down because of a staph infection. So
yeah, I know. I can't remember what that was.
Apparently on his MySpace, Forrest Griffin, you can go and there's pictures of his legs, apparently. So if people want to check out a nasty staph infection, then go take a look.
Gross.
Yeah. Last thing before I let you out of here. Again, I don't think there's been any official confirmation yet from the UFC, but the rumor won't die. And many people are saying that it's a done deal. Even Brad Imes made mention of it. Rashad Evans versus Tito Ortiz coming up. Your thoughts on that fight, Brendan? And if Tito were to lose, where does he go from there? I mean, is this a must-win for him, or can he still have a successful career in the UFC if he loses to Rashad Evans? And that's a big F, I'm just saying.
Well, I think this is his... I think Tito's a gatekeeper now in the UFC, and until Chuck is vanquished or otherwise occupied, Tito will always be a gatekeeper, and that's what his role is. So right now, you know, I think this is the Rashad's big fight to win or lose.
Yeah,
this is his big test. And he's still undefeated, is he not?
Yeah. Well, I think this is Rashad's big test.
So I think the pressure's maybe off Tito a little bit because people will always enjoy seeing him fight. They'll always like to see him fight. But I think the pressure's off him to a certain extent now. So. I think he's definitely beatable. It's definitely doable for Rashad.
I think Rashad has to be the favorite in this. I would think that, I mean, I know that Tito Ortiz has fought more world-class competition, but when I break it down, and I think it's going to be a great, entertaining fight, but I think Rashad's wrestling's better, and I think his stand-up's better. Probably Tito's got the edge in the submission game. But whether or not he can get on top of Rashad or submit him from the bottom is another matter. And I mean, Rashad Evans has never been submitted. It's kind of early to make a pick because a lot can transpire between now and the actual fight, Brendan. But I mean, who would you favor in that fight? Who would you be picking on as the early line?
I'd have to pick Rashad. Has Tito ever submitted anyone?
Well, I think he maybe back in the day rear naked choke. I think, but. I can't remember.
Nothing really pops into my mind. Yeah. I'd have to go with Rashad. I think he's I think bigger than Tito, stronger than him. I mean, he can bully him around if it comes to that. And I think he's more than adequate standing up. And I think Rashad also has the tools to work around Tito's stand and pray, you know, boxing defense. So.
Yeah,
I think he can take him to town.
Well, and I definitely think if Tito were to win, I think that would go. You know, all of a sudden he's definitely made a big, big statement that he's still a force to be reckoned with at light heavyweight. I mean, if he was to beat Rashad, and then I think it's a kind of a win-win for the UFC because if Rashad loses, it's similar to the Forrest Griffin Tito fight. If Rashad loses, then he can sit back and say, okay, well, one of our top rising stars, maybe it was a little bit too soon, and you know, they move forward, and it's still someone that they can market. If Tito were to win, then all of a sudden, for the same reason, then he's got to win over one of the rising stars, and it shows that he still can remain a force at 205. Rashad wins, it puts him over, and then you've got Rashad Evans and Quinton Jackson looking down the barrel at Chuck Liddell.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good fight for the UFC. I think a Tito win would probably be something that they wouldn't anticipate or necessarily desire. But it would be interesting to say the least.
Brendan, on that note, I'm going to wish you an early St. Patrick's Day. You know, me coming from Irish heritage, my Irish eyes will be smiling this Saturday. Probably enjoy a couple of Guinness and my Lucky Charms for breakfast. So you.
Hope Mahone, Kelsey.
Yeah, you enjoy it. You enjoy it. Just don't put green dye in your beer. I don't think any true Irish person does that. Again.
Oh, that's why you drink Guinness. You can't even tell.
Right. And if anyone wants to argue
with that, cancerous red dye in if you want.
If anyone wants to argue about putting green dye in their beer, radio at fcfighter.com. Brendan, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.